Welcome to the Command Line Podcast for August 12th, 2012. I'm your host, Thomas Command Line Gideon, a self-proclaimed hacker, eccentric, and hacktivist. This is my show about the practice and profession of programming, drawing on well over a decade of professional experience and a lifetime spent hacking, the intersection of technology with society and public policy, and anything else clever, elegant, or funny that catches my mind as a diehard technology geek. This episode is a feature cast. In it, I sit down to chat with Kevin O'Brien, one of the organizers behind the Ohio Linux Fest, an event that I was very fortunate to attend last year and enjoyed immensely. And I may try to find a way to still attend this year, although I have to admit the odds are slim, as much as I would love to go. I also have a new hacker word of the week and quite a bit of listener feedback following on from the upgrading Android feature that I did in the last show a couple of weeks ago. Before I get into any of that, though, I again have to send my gratitude out to a listener, this time to Michael Mishniak Hacker, for his incredibly generous donation. I think it was the single largest donation in the history, in the 7+ year history of the show. And it's actually kind of cool. The amount that he arrived at to make that donation is part of something that in the note he sent me to kind of explain his thinking of this unusual number, he thinks should be something that hackers are aware of, especially ones who have a tendency towards word and number games, and that's gematria. This is something that relates to numerology from the Jewish culture. It touches upon the Kabbalah. And he said, even if you set aside kind of those sort of hocus-pocus elements, as he put it, it really is kind of an interesting sort of thought experiment and can just lead to some interesting ideas and kind of, again, like I said, word and number play. So regardless of how he arrived at the number he did based on my name, I'm very, very grateful. And he actually lays claim to the second to last custom nerd merit badge. I mentioned these last time. I have one and only one left. The details about these can be found on the support page at thecommandline.net. But very quickly, the way you can get your very own, the way you can claim that last one and then force me to consider whether I have another batch made up or that's it for all time and forever and ever, is to send along a one-time donation of $20 or more, or to sign on to a recurring monthly subscription, a donation that comes back month after month in any amount from $2 on upward. If you do either of those things, then you will qualify for the very last custom nerd merit badge. So something to think about as I get down to the close of what has been to date an extraordinarily successful and very supportive experiment. I actually have 4 pieces of listener feedback, and I'm only going to talk about 3. The fourth actually was chock full of links and lots of food for thought on an offhand observation I made around the decline of use of the GPL software license. I am aware of that trend, but had not really dug into the reasons and perceptions around that. And I'm very grateful for Mike for sending in some links to do some further reading, but I do need the time to do that further reading. And based on the volume of material that he sent, I may actually go ahead and turn that into a proper feature to dig into it some more. So the other 3 that I have, all 2 and 1, were in response to the upgrading Android feature that I did in the last feature cast, leading off with a voice that you'll hear shortly, Kevin O'Brien, who wrote in when I was in response specifically to talking about note-taking on the Nexus 7, that it was something that I was still experimenting with. And he says, if you haven't checked it out yet, take a look at Evernote. I use it on my phone, tablet, and desktop, and it keeps all of them in sync. Having it on the phone is particularly good since I always have my phone with me, so I can always save a note of something I want to remember or follow up on. They have both free and paid versions, but the free version has been enough for my needs so far. And I want to thank Kevin for that, but I did point out in my response to him that my concern with that is that there is a point of centralization with Evernote, that you're reliant on a proprietary service, It is, admittedly, it does have a free-to-use version, but I really wanted something where I had a better sense of where my data was going and how I could maintain control over that. And I have to say, I've had some good success, even since I responded to Kevin in email, experimenting with using Dropbox. And I know that that service is not really known for its security, but purely regarding it as a transport, layering ENCFS or ENCFS encryption on top of that, and then using Kryptonite, a GPLv2 Android client, to actually decrypt those encrypted volumes and export files that I need to work on. And it has, and I haven't tried this yet, but it does have support to upload notes that I generate locally on the device into the encrypted volume and then up into Dropbox. And what I have been using in terms of creating notes files and actually entering the contents thereof is Vim Touch, along with really pretty much any file manager, but I use the ES file manager because it works with some other apps that I have on there. And so far that works pretty well, especially since I installed the Hacker's Keyboard, which gives me a more complete layout that has a tab and escape and several things that are useful with the way that I use Vim on a desktop. So it's still a little crude, but evolving, and it definitely solves my needs in terms of having a much stronger sense of ownership and knowing where my data is going and who may or may not have access to that. The fact that I own the encryption keys and no one else does means that I'm a little more confident of that solution. If you're in a situation where perhaps that's not as sensitive or as important, and I am using this device at work, I will point out, and I do work on some very sensitive software projects and other materials that I do need to be very careful about my security. If that's not the case for you, I think Kevin's suggestion probably is worth checking out. So thanks for that, Kevin. Even though it wasn't really the best solution for what I was looking for, hopefully that helps somebody else who may find themselves with either the Nexus 7, another tablet, or a constellation of devices like what you describe. The next note came in from Chris, who writes, "You were talking about creating some content with the 7 that you could sync with your computers. Had you looked at installing some Linux distro alongside Android?" And he provides a link that I'll drop into the show notes about doing so on a Droid Incredible. He says, "This particular article is a little dated, but something similar should work. If somebody hasn't thought of doing this to the Nexus 7 yet, they soon will." And I don't necessarily disagree. I haven't really looked into installing another OS, although I've been aware of this possibility. But I did look this last week into rooting my Nexus 7, what that would involve, since some of the apps that we are working on for the day job that I talked about in the piece about upgrading to Android as being kind of a prod to get into this newer generation of devices do actually require root to be fully capable or even to work at all. The limiter right now is the cost of rolling back if something goes wrong. It isn't difficult, but for rooting or installing another OS alongside, backing ups seems like a good prerequisite, which I just really haven't gotten around to yet. If I do put Linux on it at some point, I'll definitely share the experience. Likewise, for rooting, both that holds for the Nexus 7 and also the Samsung Galaxy S2 that I have. Thanks for the suggestion, Chris. It's something that in one form or another, like I said, I do expect to eventually follow through on and have that be continuous with the discussion of my experiences with Android to date. And finally, Samuel wrote in to say, "Firstly, thank you for the reflective and interesting podcast. I often enjoy the food for thought. I do not have a Nexus 7, but I do have a Nook Color, which is of similar dimensions. I found that despite truly loving swipe and similar style keyboards on the phone, they are much harder to use on the larger tablet. My favorite keyboard on the Nook Color is Thumb Keyboard, which offers a split keyboard letters on the edges that I find much more comfortable to type on. Perhaps your thumbs are larger than mine, but I appreciated not having to reach as much." And this is something that I have, again, also dug into a little bit further and appreciate the suggestion here. But a thumb keyboard, unfortunately, is not available on the Nexus 7 yet. There are a small number of apps that I have tried to install that I have on my phone that just, they haven't cross-compiled, they haven't updated them to include specific support for Jelly Bean for whatever reason. I suspect that if I do get to try swipe on the Nexus 7, though, that I'll probably agree, the more I've thought about it, that it just doesn't seem to make as much sense. You'd actually have to trace out much wider shapes on the Nexus, and I think that might exacerbate what I've heard increasingly people reporting in terms of sore spots on their fingers from just swiping too much on these glass surfaces that at a macro scale they seem super smooth, but really at a micro scale still are kind of rough and can lead to some wear and tear. I did use the suggestion here from Samuel as a prod to look at alternatives, though. A friend of mine has long recommended SwiftKey. Installing it, though, on the Nexus 7, I realized that the multiple word-based prediction, which is actually very attractive, is actually something that the Jelly Bean input system already does. It's already built into the stock soft keyboard there that as you complete a word, it actually starts to look ahead to the next one based on your actual usage. And I found on the Nexus 7 anyway, for those that are familiar with SwiftKey, that the layout is much more cramped than the stock keyboard. The keys are smaller to try to hit smaller targets. So I'll keep trying keyboards that are recommended for the Nexus 7 that any of you might send in alongside of this great suggestion that Samuel sent in. But as I continue to use it, I actually realized that at least in Android 4.1, I really do like the stock keyboard quite a bit, so it's going to raise the bar for any alternatives in terms of me wanting to replace that for full-time use. Thanks again for your suggestion, Samuel, and thanks for everybody else who sent in feedback in the last couple of weeks. As always, if you have a question, issue, something that you wish to share, you can send those to feedback@thecommandline.net. The hacker word of the week comes from The Jargon File, maintained by Eric Raymond at catv.org. Fork. Adjective. Verb intransitive. 1. Common after 1997, especially in the Linux community. An open source software project is said to have forked or be forked when the project group fissions into two or more parts pursuing separate lines of development, or less commonly, when a third party unconnected to the project group begins its own line of development. Forking is considered a bad thing, not merely because it implies a lot of wasted effort in the future, but because forks tend to be accompanied by a great deal of strife and acrimony between the successor groups over issues of legitimacy, succession, and design direction. There is serious social pressure against forking. As a result, major forks, such as the GNU Emacs X Emacs split, the fissionings of the 386 BSD group into three daughter projects, and the short-lived GCC EGCS split, are rare enough that they are remembered individually in hacker culture. 2. Unix. Uncommon, probably influenced by a mainstream expletive. Terminally slow or dead. Originated when one system was slowed to a snail's pace by an inadvertent fork bomb. So as I mentioned, unfortunately I'm not going to make it out to the Ohio Linux Fest this year, as much as I would dearly love to, but also I have something that's a little bit of a consolation prize and just a special bit of audio to share with all of you. I want to welcome onto the show one of the folks responsible for this fantastic event, Kevin O'Brien. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Thomas. Real pleasure to be here. I've been listening to your podcast for a number of years now.
Well, thank you. And it's great to finally have you on, especially to talk about such a wonderful topic. Would you mind first perhaps explaining a little bit about yourself and your involvement with the fest?
Sure. I am the publicity director. I've had that position for a little over a year. Prior to that, I was the Linux user group liaison for about a year. And so I've been involved in the Linux community. I'm president of my local LUG. And so this is just something that is a passion for me, free software.
So speaking of the LUGs, I understand that the Ohio Linux Fest has kind of an interesting history, how it got started. Do you want to just explain that in a nutshell, how it came into being?
Well, it is kind of hearsay because most of this happened before I got involved with them. But my understanding is that it really started almost as a university project, because this is in Columbus, Ohio, which I know you're out in Baltimore, but out here in Big Ten country, we know that's the home of Ohio State University. And so I think that that had a, it was like students there that did something the first year. And then it almost fell apart after that, because the thing with students is they'll have an interest in something, and then the next year they have an interest in something else, or they've graduated or whatever. And then a few people got involved. One of them, Beth Lynn Eicher, is kind of the guiding light and has been for a number of years. And Mad Dog has been very influential in working with us every year, and is a big support. And so we got it on a firm footing, established a 501c3 corporation to run everything, and this is our 10th year, so it seems to be working out pretty well.
It sure does. And I hadn't realized that. That's kind of curious. Mad Dog was one of the keynoters the year that I came. I didn't realize that he had been involved with this for so long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We love Mad Dog, but who doesn't, you know? if you take a look, he's probably had a speaking slot every year. And, from what we're hearing from the people who come there is that they just want him to come back. And I know I would go to listen to him talk anywhere.
He's definitely an invaluable speaker. I think the thing that impressed me is here is someone who not only is very well known and very much admired broadly in the Linux community, but someone who witnessed firsthand so much of the history of the evolution of this free software.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that history, for me, I happen to be someone with a strong interest in that. My first degree was in history, actually. I tend to take a historical view of a lot of these things. I've been involved with computing since, 1980s on the personal computer side, although prior to that there was mainframes and things like that. And so I've actually lived through a certain amount of that stuff and can talk about having my first Z80 powered computer and and through the twin floppy XT and so on.
Wow. So you also then have witnessed not just the success, the sustaining success of Linux, but also the personal computing revolution and quite a bit of what preceded that as well. So were you programming on punch tape or punch cards back in the day on those big iron systems?
Oh, punch cards.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. PNV, we called it. Punch and verify. there were a lot of tricks that you learned when you were dealing with all of it. The first was that computing time was cheapest at 3 a.m. So if you could get your stuff down, if you were a student and you had to run something, you get your punch cards down there around 3 a.m. and they'd run it for pennies. You go there in the afternoon and it's dollars. And of course, the worst thing that could happen is if your cards get out of order. So when you had all your cards in order, you'd take a magic marker and draw a diagonal line across the top. And that made it very easy to get it back in order if anything got out.
I love things like that are not purely technological hacks, that are just kind of simple, clever things that are so obvious after someone points it out, but that solve a problem that on the face of it may not seem so easy to deal with.
Yeah, you haven't lived until you've got a box of 1,000 cards that some idiot dropped on the floor.
Yeah, no doubt. So is it Mad Dog's involvement? Is it that appreciation of history, or is it something else or combination of things that make Ohio Linux Fest distinct or unique among the Linux Fests that are out there?
Well, I can tell you some of the things that I am particularly proud of that we do. I don't want to say other people don't do them. I'm a great supporter of all of the free software community, and I'm friends with a lot of people in other festivals, the, you know, Scale, Indiana, Southeast, what have you. Though I have friends in all of these places. So let me just say that one of the things that I'm really proud of is that we have always had a free, in what we call enthusiast level registration. Now, one of the things we did last year, because for planning, it really helps if you know how many people are going to be there so that you can arrange the space and tables and all of the different things you have to do. We were running into a problem of people would just show up, and so we would have no idea. So what we did is we changed it to say it's free if you register in advance through the website, or it's $5 if you just walk in the door. And it's not about the $5 because we need the money. It's about, you know, come on, folks. We just need you to, you know, register so we know what to plan for. So it's always been something that is, you know, free to someone who just wants to come and learn something. And then on top of that, another thing I'm really proud of is we've tried to have a focus that says we want to just, to not just be aimed at the sysadmins and the experts. We also want to aim it at the new people. We want to reach out. We want to bring people into the community and help them to understand free software. And if you've ever listened to Mad Dog, you know that that's something that he's really big on.
Well, I think one of the things that impressed me, and I definitely got that in looking over the selection of talks last year, is that you don't do that at the expense of talks that would be appealing to people who are more experienced, who've been around this community and this technology for some time. You really managed to strike a really good mixture, good balance.
Right. Yeah, we try to do that in a number of ways. Certainly get a range of talks. I can tell you, last year I was invited to, it's not my area of responsibility to line up the talks. Some other people do that. But I was invited to sort of take a look and offer an opinion. And we would try and say we've got beginner level, intermediate level, advanced level, and fill each of those buckets individually. And, you know, make sure we've got a certain number of beginner level talks, make sure we have a certain number of intermediate level talks, and the advanced level. And I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that. Another thing that we emphasize very strongly is that it is inclusive, it is family friendly. We want women to be involved and be comfortable. And, you know, you've spent as much time in the internet world, if not more, than I do. So I'm sure you're aware of all of the controversies we've had over the past year about this. You know, people behaving abominably. The most recent one was this sort of friendly fire thing where one group of women picked on another woman because they thought she was dressed too attractively. And, you know, like that doesn't have a place in open source. So what we've just tried to do is say, you know, we want this to be a place where you can bring your kids. And some people do. In fact, we've got a young person who's going to be one of our keynote speakers this year, Elizabeth Garby, who is the daughter of Bedail Garby, who you may know from the Debian project and HP. He's retiring now from HP. He just announced that recently. And she's going to talk about growing up in the open source community. She's talked at Ohio Linux Fest before, so I think this is actually going to be her third time speaking there. She's kind of part of the family for us. But, you know, she started with her first install, with a little help from her father, she'll admit, did a Debian install at the age of 9. So we want to be that kind of a festival.
Well, I think you also go well beyond that, there's the, I saw the Sunday workshop is going to be part of this year's programming. Yep. As well as last year. You want to talk about that a little bit more? Because I think that goes beyond, it's great that you set that bar of making it family friendly, speaking as a geek dad who likes to include his own kids and his own family in these kinds of venues and looks for ones that specifically have things on offer. But you go well beyond that. I mean, you touched upon some of these issues. And at the PenguinCon where you and I met, and that was four, five, 6 years back, there were these same sorts of gender issues and questions coming up of appropriate behavior and how the community is receptive specifically to women in this setting. You guys go beyond just these kinds of discussions that emerge organically and address this very head on. I think that that's very interesting.
Yeah, we do. We've the diversity and open source workshop, and this is our third or fourth year doing it. And that's for people who want to explore in a little more detail what is it that that we need to do in order to be more inclusive, to bring people in. You know, I remember when I was in graduate school, I was studying for a doctorate in economics, which I got 80% of the way towards before life happened. And but, you know, being in a doctoral program in reasonably technical area, economics is very mathematics intensive. And, you know, at that point, just kind of looking around and saying, well, you know, the women are just as smart at this. You know, they've got just as good math skills and all of these other kinds of skills. And then you go to some of these conferences and it's like, okay, can anyone find a woman? You know, it's like, where's Waldo? Spot the woman. We don't want to be like that. And I hope that we've done a good job of making it a place where women will come knowing that they can participate as geeks, as technical people, as just part of the group and enjoy the festival. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
I think from firsthand evidence, you are succeeding at that. That my impression was that it was a fairly good representation amongst attendees, definitely among the speakers. Some of my favorites were Mel Chua in particular, talking about
I love Mel.
Yeah, about how to kind of hack your habits and your behaviors, and that was a fascinating talk. Definitely amongst the organizers in the closing plenary, when we got to see all of the volunteers and staffers that work on this, that there was good representation there. So whether that's a direct outcome of that workshop that you guys have been doing for the past handful of years and are continuing or not, it seems like you're doing something right.
More than anything else, if you are paying attention, you're going to do the right thing. I think most of the time when these events get into trouble, it's not so much that someone was trying to create an issue, it's just that they're not thinking. They don't have their brain turned on at that moment. So we just think if you think about this stuff, and, you know, every once in a while I get brought up short, someone say, hey, you know, check your thinking on this. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess I shouldn't have said it that way, should I? And that's okay if we have the conversation, right?
Well, yeah, and if you create a space, if that's specific to the organizing work that you do in your interactions with the people behind this, if you create a trusting space where you can do that, I think that also says something about the ethos that you guys bring into this. And it doesn't necessarily, as you say, mean that everybody has to get it right all the time, but that people are cross-checking and supporting each other in a way that is more about the outcomes, more about doing good and putting together a good event.
Right. And I think we have put together an absolute dynamite event. This is a 3-day event for everyone other than me. Me and the other organizers, we're going to be down there Thursday, the 27th, stuffing bags and doing all sorts of things. But Friday the 28th, that's basically training day. We have what we call the Ohio Linux Fest Institute, and that is just absolutely wonderful. We had a fellow, everything that we do is done by volunteers. No one is paid for any of this stuff. So we've just had really good volunteers. We had a fellow, Scott Merrill, who came in and took control of the OLF Institute. I think he's done a great job, and we have real professional trainers from places like Red Hat, Cloudera, and the Linux Institute. You can register for a whole day of training for $300. You probably know if you go to any of these professional boot camps or whatever, it costs a whole lot more. And so you can get a full day of training on Hadoop, a full day of training on Puppet, And then if you don't want to do a whole day on one topic, we got some half-day things on performance tuning, security-enhanced Linux, advanced shell scripting, the VI editor, and time management for sysadmins. We're also offering exam cram for the LPI exam. We offer the exam on Sunday, but Friday we've got an all-day exam cram. Then something that we've done the last few years as well is a Linux basics for newcomers. And what we do is we give them a chance. We've got a fellow, Scott Courtney, put this together. And during the day Friday, people get a chance to install, configure, kick the tires a little bit of Linux. And then we've offered something new this year. We're always trying something new. You know, you've got to keep pushing the boundaries a little bit, see what works. We're going to offer a training track aimed at newcomers all day Saturday. And we're going to be talking about LibreOffice, and actually I'm going to be the instructor for that one. Door-to-Door Geek is coming in to do a, you know, one-hour session of, all right, now you got Linux installed, what comes next? A buddy of mine from Michigan, Ryan Cather, is coming to talk about different desktop environments, GNOME, KDE, Unity. Hans Cox is coming to talk about gaming on Linux. And he's not talking about wine. He's talking about Linux native games, and he's got some great ones to show. We got someone talking about GIMP and so on. So it's like 8 hours of training that people can have, no additional charge at all. We're just and that's something new. So I'm pretty excited to see that happen.
I might have to look over that and see if maybe I can justify this as a business expense. It sounds like the odds of that being so may be greater than zero. So I might have to revisit.
Oh, well, you know, we'd love to have you there, Thomas. You know that. And, you know, if you ever want to do some recording there and I can help, just let me know. Because I think part of my job as publicity is to, you know, help people to do that. And I think this is going to be a good opportunity. Let me tell you about some of the speakers. Now, Friday, we will have a keynote from Mad Dog. I say he speaks there just about every year. And this one, if you follow his blog, you will probably get a pretty good idea of the coming change that he's talking about. So he's got a thing Friday. Then we're doing a Friday night pre-party. A little bit different this time. We're calling it a slumber party. And we're going to have, we're thinking of having a competition for who has the most interesting pajamas. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I want to emphasize family friendly here.
Yeah, so, I would expect no less.
Yeah. And, you know, milk and cookies be provided and stuff like that. So it's sort of a geek version. We're also going to have the BOF sessions, Birds of a Feather. We move that to Friday, which I think is going to work better on Friday evening, because otherwise you're competing with all of the scheduled talks. And, you know, last year I got to one BOF session, and it was on KDE, which is my desktop environment of choice, but it was the only one I could get to because I, you know, there were all these other things that I had to be doing. Then Saturday, we hit the ground running. Saturday morning, we have Wendy Seltzer as our opening keynoter, and you probably are well familiar, but for the benefit of your listeners.
She's a colleague of mine, actually, at New America. She's a fellow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, I don't think I had that on the list.
No, by all means, please explain for anybody else who may not be familiar with Wendy's work.
What I have that she is policy counsel to the World Wide Web Consortium, a fellow with the Yale Law School's Information Society Project, fellow with the Harvard Berkman Center for Internet and Society, founded and leads the Chilling Effects Clearinghouse, helping internet users to understand their rights in response to cease and desist threats, on the board of directors of the Tor Project, and on the board of the World Wide Web Foundation. So, and now I discover she's one of your colleagues as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is a huge get for us to get someone of that caliber. And she's going to be talking about, you know, what do we need to do to stop things like SOPA and PIPA, and, you know, now it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership and, you know, World Intellectual Property Organizations coming back in with more nonsense. That's going to be a great way to kick off the day Saturday. Then we've got 5 different tracks of talks going on throughout the day, in addition to which we have the open source solution stage, which is where companies can present their own open source offerings. We offer this, and we've got a number of companies, you know, your IBMs, your Oracles, things like that, that are sponsors of Ohio Linux Fest. There's an opportunity for them to make a pitch for something. And another thing that we're doing that is new this year, and again, it was because we had a volunteer who took this and ran with it, a fellow named Walker, who is doing basically a job fair. And we're talking to companies that are looking for Linux talent and giving them an opportunity to come down and meet with people. And then, you know, if you're a Linux sysadmin or an open source programmer or whatever, you know, bring your resume with you, and you're going to have a chance to talk to some of these people. And so we're real excited about that. It's something that we've thought we've needed for a few years, and we finally got all the pieces put together. And then we've got speakers, you know, throughout the day. You know, Zonker Brockmeyer is going to be one of our speakers. In fact, we just posted our schedule. So if you go to OhioLinux.org, you can see the schedule. It's OhioLinux.org/schedule. And if you take a look at that, you can get all of the details. And I encourage people to do that. It's going to give you a chance to make all of your plans and arrangements. We've got Jonathan Nado is going to be there talking about the accessibility. I don't know if you follow Jonathan at all, but he just started an organization to promote accessibility in open source. Jonathan is one of the organizers of the Northeast Linux Fest, and he's also blind. And he has the interesting perspective. He was not born blind. It was apparently, I think I have this somewhat straight, there was like an automobile accident when he was a teenager or something. So it gives him a certain perspective about it. And so he's very active in saying we need more accessibility in open source. We need to make all of this wonderful technology work for people. It, you know, the funny thing, I was listening to him the other day, we were talking about how people don't set out to be evil, they just don't think. And it's so much the case with accessibility. It's not that anyone is trying to keep other abled people from using the technology, is just that they don't think, you know. Let's see, we've got Joss Portfliet, who's the community manager for OpenSUSE, is going to be a speaker. If I go through all of this, I'll start leaving people out.
Sure.
But we're going to close Saturday with the final keynote after Elizabeth Garby. We're going to close it with Angie Byron. And Angie is from the Drupal community. She's director of community development at IKEA, which is the company that commercializes Drupal. She's a core co-maintainer for Drupal 7. She's on the board of directors of the Drupal Association. And her emphasis is community. Kind of like John O'Bacon, another community person. And so her talk is going to be how to create ravenously passionate contributors.
Huh.
So I think that's going to be interesting. I'm going to see how she does that.
Sure, absolutely. So it's hard for me to try to tease out from that what, if anything, you're doing that makes your 10th anniversary even more special. I mean, it sounds like your baseline is already so jam-packed of interesting things, and you're experimenting year after year. Is there anything that you can think of, anything that you are doing a little bit different or above and beyond because it is one of these first early milestones for an event like this?
Well, I'm not at all sure that we are exactly. The interesting thing is that the way the calendar has worked, 2 years ago, we had the 40th anniversary of Unix. And we had Doug McElroy as one of our keynote speakers. Now, Doug was one of the people at Bell Labs who I think people like Dennis Ritchie. But I think he was like the manager that they all reported to. And so was there at the beginning. And I think he was responsible for creating pipes in the language and things like that. So he, that was the big thing then. And then last year was the 20 years of Linux. And we had a big celebration of that. So it's our 10th year, but we sort of don't really have any more big guns on that front exactly. So I think it's more just, let's just do the best damn job we can. Put on a good event and make everyone feel like they got their money's worth.
That sounds like a good way to go about it. Well, Kevin, as you've mentioned, if folks want to get all of the details, how they can register the full programming, more information about the fantastic lineup of speakers, then go to ohiolinux.org.
If I could, just one more thing real quick here, and that has to do with registration. We're doing something a little bit different this year. I want everyone to understand. The enthusiast registration, the free one, is still there. We used to have a supporter registration for $65. We've dropped that. And partly it seemed to confuse people, and we've moved instead to an a la carte. So when you go to register, there's a second page. If you want to go to the party, there's a Saturday party, and I think we're going to have in another week an announcement. We've got someone pretty good lined up as entertainment. And that's a $5 ticket, and it gets you a drink, so that's not a big deal. You can get the T-shirt for $25. You can sign up for the Diversity and Open Source Workshop for $20 if you want to do that. And finally, give us money. a $25 button there. And I just want people to understand that the commercial sponsors, the corporate sponsors, cover about half of our bills. The other half has to come from the community or we go out of business. I know money's tight, but, a number of people have said, hey, $25, I can do that. So I just wanted to mention that. And, otherwise I think we've covered everything.
No, I appreciate you mentioning that. You're right to call that out. It was something that I mentioned in passing when I played your audio promo a few weeks past. So that was a really good kind of explanation, drawing that much more out fully, both the reasonings of why you're doing it, how important this is to keep this going, and then giving people far more choices and then more reasons to say yes. So I'm glad that you did dig into that. That's worthwhile as well. Thank you so much for talking about that, everything else about this fantastic event. And I honestly will take a second look and see if there's maybe some way in the last minute here I might be able to make it out. No promises, but I'm definitely hoping, if not this year, definitely next year I want to come out, because it sounds like it's just going to keep getting better year after year after year.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. Thanks so much, Thomas.
Sure, my pleasure. That's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed the show, please do tell a friend. Or go to the website at thecommandline.net and click on the support link for all the ways you can financially help out with the production of the show. If you have a question, suggestion, or correction, you can send those to feedback@thecommandline.net, or you can post those as a comment up on the website. If you're away from your computer and the internet at the moment, call the listener comment line at area code 240-949-2638. If you need to get in touch with me securely, details of my public key pair can be found at thecommandline.net/gnupg-fingerprints. The next episode, which should hit the feed in a week, will be a news program as usual, so until then, don't forget to hack your world. I would like to thank the Internet Archive for media hosting and bandwidth. The views expressed on this program are my own, and where applicable, those of my guests, and in no way reflect those of my employer or anyone else. This show is produced from 100% recycled bits. Except where noted, permission to recycle those further is granted under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. That means you're free to change this show as much as you like, as long as you don't alter credits, and you share your changes under the same license.